Welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today we are taking advantage of the bye week to bringing you guys a few different topics and focus on a few other things to help me take a look at what's happened over the weekend, all of the non-football game news. I have Steve Fetch, our basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. Fetch, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So obviously there's a lot of big news surrounding the Jayhawks. With the notice of allegations coming out, you know, just recently, the big question, I think, once the performer for Late Night was announced in Snoop Dogg, was, you know, where was that going to go? And, you know, was this going to be making some sort of statement to the NCAA? So first of all, were you surprised by the video announcing Snoop Dogg? Because, you know, Bill Self comes out with a big Adidas shirt, the big, you know, gold chain and all of that. A lot of people, especially nationally, have kind of read that as a big FU to the NCAA. Is that the way you read it, or did you see something else there?
Yeah, I kind of read it that way too, to be honest with you. I don't think that was very subtle. I definitely loved it, as you can tell by me immediately changing the Twitter account's profile picture to a still from that video. So you know where I stand on whether or not I think it was a good idea. But yeah, I definitely think that it was probably thumbing their nose or maybe a different finger at the NCAA a little bit. But like I said, I mean, I'm kind of on board with it at this point. You know, we'll see. I don't really think that's going to impact anything that's going on with the, you know, allegations into, you know, maybe some infractions coming down the road or some penalties rather coming down the road. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's, you know, maybe a nice little, hey, we got your back, Coach Self. Hey, we got your back, fan base type stuff. So I'm all for any kind of jab you can take at the NCAA.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, you know, I heard a lot of writers or a lot of podcasters nationally talking about how, you know, this was really stupid of Kansas. Like, why are they trying to rile up the NCAA in this? You know, that the only way they're going to get out of severe sanctions is to kind of grovel at the NCAA's feet and hope that they don't hit them too hard. And then I think everyone's assuming that Kansas is not going to try to fight this too much, or that if they do, they're going to get hammered. But to be honest, the way that I've read those notes of allegations, the NCAA is going to try to make an example out of KU, regardless of how much they deserve it or what else they do to anyone else. Like, they want to make a huge hit on the biggest program that will ever have this kind of evidence against them, and see how much they can do with it, essentially. So I don't know that trying to play nice with the NCAA is going to do anything. We've already seen how cooperating with the NCAA works. It hasn't worked out well for anyone that's done it in the last couple of years. So like, the NCAA is definitely trying to take some power back, and thumbing your nose at them, it probably won't make it any worse, because I don't think anything that you can do at this point is going to change what they're going to try to do.
Yeah, I agree. Not to get too sidetracked here and make this into an NCAA violations podcast, but you know, a lot of people are comparing us to what happened with Georgia Tech, and I think that's probably a little bit misplaced for a couple reasons. You know, one, the NCAA has kind of said that any kind of precedent set doesn't really apply anymore. Also, you know, Georgia Tech, there were specific findings that, you know, for long story short, kind of coaches were intimately involved in arranging some improper benefits and stuff like that, where there isn't really that evidence here with KU. And then lastly, you know, Georgia Tech cooperated with the NCAA, which very clearly is not going to happen and very clearly is a bad idea. So definitely not saying that we're out of the woods by any means, but I don't think you can just look at what happened to Georgia Tech with the 1 year postseason ban and some other lighter penalties and say that Kansas is going to get hammered just because of that.
Yeah, well, the other thing with Georgia Tech, and again, you're right, we don't want to turn this into an NCAA podcast, but the other thing that a lot of people have been ignoring is the fact that that Georgia Tech program has already been punished three separate times prior to this. Twice prior to this. They had some issues back in 2009 that put them on probation in 2011. They had that probation extended in 2014. They just got off probation in 2017. And so they are, by definition, like, the very epitome of a repeat offender. And so whatever, you know, punishment they got was going to be more severe, because it's now three times in less than a decade for the same program having similar sort of issues multiple times. I'm surprised they didn't get hit with like a lack of institutional control, just given how much history they have there. But you know, like I don't think you can read anything into that because the situation is not at all the same. So, all right, but in terms of back to the Snoop Dogg performance, because there's a lot of people, you know, I don't know what I really expected from Snoop Dogg in terms of what he was actually going to do. But, you know, he has a very well-known type of show. You know, there was a statement that came out afterwards where Bill Self expected them, I guess, to do a radio-edited version of the show. And Jeff Long, for something he will never live down, is talking about how he didn't realize what acrobatic dancers meant. What do you think is the bigger issue? The fact that they had this show and or the fact that they – you know, I think the best way to describe it is that they botched the apology for it.
Yeah, well, I think you hit the nail right on the head there. If they had just, you know, not said anything, really, I mean, I think that this would have blown over already. All of the, you know, headlines that you see on Twitter and whatnot are basically Kansas apologizes for blah, 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 blah. You know, had that not happened, there probably, you know, there would have been stuff obviously circulating on Twitter, and maybe, you know, ESPN.com would have had something or something like that. But like, I'm seeing stuff in like the AP and Washington Post and stuff like that tweeting about the apology. So I think that they probably did not do a very good job of damage control and probably let things get away from them a little bit. I saw a couple of people on Twitter. I think it was Nick Schwert and Jayhawk Talk were kind of the two who pointed this out first, as far as people I saw, that, you know, they've really botched some PR stuff here in the last couple of years, whether it be, you know, firing David Beatty and withholding the $3 million, or the messaging around Puka Williams suspension. And now this really makes you kind of maybe get a little bit worried about what's going on in the athletic department. But the concert itself, you know, I have to admit, I actually did not watch any of Late Night Live. I was busy having the Minnesota Twins rip my heart out once again. But, you know, watching kind of short snippets and stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I guess, what you would expect from a Snoop Dogg concert. But if you see, you know, pictures and stuff of the crowd, like everyone in the crowd seems into it, regardless of their age. All the recruits seem to be into it. And that's kind of the number one thing that I care most about. So I guess at the end of the day, all the other stuff is kind of secondary compared to what or how it's going to impact recruiting.
Yeah, and just a couple things there. First of all, you're right. It seemed like everybody enjoyed it that was actually there. You know, they moved it to the end of the event, so anybody who might have gotten offended, knowing full well what Snoop Dogg does, like that's part of the reason that I think they kind of had an idea of what was happening, but thought maybe he would tone it down a little bit. But, you know, because they moved it to the end just in case. Like, you know, they made all of these precautions for that's what was going to happen. And the concert wasn't actually televised. So it wasn't on the ESPN Plus broadcast. They did all the basketball stuff. And to be honest, I think that's actually the main reason why they moved it to the end, because they wanted to broadcast the entirety of all the basketball events on ESPN Plus. But, of course, the contract with Snoop Dogg wouldn't allow them to broadcast that over the internet in terms of his concert. So – you know, it makes that could be an easy argument for why they moved it to the end, kind of television wise, logistically. But to be honest, like, you know, not a lot of people saw it live, but those that were actually there in the building were talking about, you know, just how great it was. You know, all the recruits seemed to love it. You know, even though he's an older, you know, older rapper in terms of like not of, you know, what the popular, you know, today's music essentially is, like, everybody knows who Snoop Dogg is. Everybody, for the most part, enjoys his shows, and everybody really had a good time from everything that I saw. You know, they're the most misleading headlines I saw out there was that, you know, KU brought in strippers to dance, you know, with Snoop Dogg.
Right.
And it's like, no, not strippers at all. You know, I mean, it sounds kind of corny to talk about it, but, you know, pole dancing is actually a competitive sport at this point. Like, there's a lot of things that I wouldn't call a sport, and you may not call that a sport, but it's as much a sport as some of the other things that are getting televised nowadays. And, you know, I think there was actually even a joke at one point that they were going to televise it on ESPN The Ocho in terms of one of those competitions. So, I mean, it's not, you know, it may not have been what you would typically think of in a college type environment, especially if kids are going to be there, but it wasn't in extremely poor taste. It's not something that, you know, you would think would be pornographic or anything like that. And so, I didn't really have a problem with it, especially seeing some of it afterwards. I thought it was hilarious, you know, the big dog walking around with the big blunt and Snoop Dogg with the Snoop Cash money gun and all of that stuff. You know, but like, I don't think it really sent any sort of message other than, you know, we want the recruits, so we want everybody in the building to have a good time. You know, here's an artist that, while he may say a few things, and maybe the language people might have had issues with, but, you know, that's what you get typically when you have a rapper come in and do a
right.
show like that. You know, they had it toned down in previous years, and I guess maybe they kind of thought that that would get taken care of. But a point that you kind of hit on with all the PR issues they've had, it makes you kind of wonder what's going on, because I don't remember them having these sorts of issues when Shane Zinger was the athletic director. Like, yeah, he had lots of other problems in terms of how he ran the department, but PR really wasn't one of them. The only bad PR hit I can remember is the fact that he continued to let David Beatty go out there every week and say, you know, that we just got to get the guys to play better. The guys just need to, you know, all that stuff. But it wasn't anything in terms of like PR gaffes by the athletic department themselves. It makes me wonder how much Jeff Long is just used to being an AD of an SEC school where it doesn't really matter too much what they do. Everybody, you know, is in love with the athletic department because that kind of runs the show at football, especially. You know, so I wonder if there's just a little bit of a difference in the optics that he's still trying to get used to, and trying to kind of handle some of that stuff. I don't know if that's really what it is, but it just seems like the biggest issues we have so far in the department are really just about the department itself not setting up the best optics. And if those are going to be the worst issues you have in terms of optics, I don't know that I can really complain too much.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think, you know, someone else pointed out, and maybe it was Nick Short again, that Zinger just kind of didn't really say anything at all, which is, you know, maybe good or bad PR, depending on how you look at it. But, yeah, I definitely think that there's, you know, maybe some cleaning up to do in that department. But I guess that's also not really my forte, so I'm coming at it as a, you know, a layman rather than someone who works in PR for a living. So who knows, maybe there is some sort of method to their madness.
Yeah, well, you know, and in terms of the apology, like, they easily could have given a similar sort of apology and just come out and said, you know, we're sorry if anyone was offended by the performance. There was some miscommunication in terms of what was, you know, what the content of that performance was going to be. So, you know, again, sorry if you were offended. We'll try to do better next time. And if he just left it at that,
yeah,
everybody would have just kind of brushed right over it. It would have been, hey, look what Snoop Dogg did. Like, the story probably would have been about the money gun that Snoop Dogg had instead of the apology for the quote-unquote acrobatic dancers. And really, I think that reissued that press release, removing the line about the acrobatic dancers later, I think. But way too many screen grabs. Obviously, it's out there just as much as the new official one, just because of the way that the internet works.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, you're right about the, you know, sorry if you're offended thing. I mean, normally I think people rightfully frown on that as, you know, not a real apology. But yeah, I think in this case, a not real apology like that is 100% what was warranted, like you said.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will go ahead and leave it there. I don't know that there's too much more to talk about late night. There wasn't really a lot in terms of the scrimmage itself or anything that actually came out of late night. You know, in terms of what that's going to affect for the season coming up. There wasn't really a lot of recruiting news to come out of it or anything like that. So we'll go ahead and throw it to a quick break. And we have some football stuff we want to talk about when we come back, but we will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right. The other big news that kind of, we kind of got shot in the foot a little bit. Mike and I were recording and talking about the Oklahoma game. And then about 3 hours after that, the news broke that the KU football team, Les Miles specifically, had fired Les Caning, and had promoted Brent Dearman to offensive coordinator. You know, we have been talking kind of privately and actually somewhat on the podcast that, you know, Brent Dearman seems to kind of be the answer for this offense, something guy we want to be more involved. Just how happy were you when you got the news?
Very. You know, obviously I'm no expert in, you know, lower level offensive coaches and whatnot, but you just look at, you know, what he did at Bethel, over 500 yards a game, over 50 points a game. I don't care if you're doing that in NAIA or Canadian football or whatever. I mean, that's impressive stuff. So, to have a guy like that, and also a guy who literally wrote a book on the RPO, you know, having someone like that, having a progressive mind in charge of the football program, or in charge of half of the football program, I guess. Really exciting. And, you know, I think one thing that, you know, maybe gets overlooked a little bit is Kansas certainly has some guys who, I think, if you get them the ball in the right spots, I mean, especially, you know, Puka Williams and, you know, Charlotte and Parchment, and, you know, even like, you know, Kwame Lassiter, who's, I think, a little bit more of a possession guy, but has shown that, you know, when he does get in space, he can make guys miss and stuff. You know, they have the ability to put up some points and put up some big plays. And a coach who is inventive on offense and can kind of scheme and get guys the ball in good spots, you know, that's something that can make a huge difference in college football. And I think that they can, you know, also overlook some of the deficiencies, most notably, you know, the offensive line has not been great. Carter Stanley has not been great at times, but, you know, when he's got one read and that guy's open, or when he's got, you know, hey, here's your one read, and if it's not there, take off and run, he's been pretty effective. So I think Dierman's going to do a really good job at really putting everyone in spots where they can succeed. So it's really tough not to be excited by this hire, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's kind of been the quote-unquote secret weapon that hasn't really been secret to anyone. I mean, he's been reported on in terms of, you know, that little factoid about him literally writing a book about the RPO. You know, the whole RPO when they beat Boston College, like, you know, they were talking about how that got introduced and how it was used and how they relied on it so heavily. And, like, everybody knew that came from Brent Dierman. You know, he's been – it almost seems like – they wanted to kind of hide him and hope that nobody's going to snap him up. And so that's why they've, you know, haven't really kind of given him, put him in the spotlight or anything like that. But, you know, that's the only thing that's been successful all year long with any kind of regularity is those RPO concepts. Like even against Oklahoma, they went back to the RPO concept some, but there was, you know, when drive stalled out, it was because they completely abandoned it, you know, for three or four plays in a row. And like you saw kind of that tug of war between wanting to embrace this RPO concept type of offense. But Les Canning did not seem to want to embrace that at all and kept fighting to get back control to the offense that he is used to. And it wasn't working at all. You know, that was what featured heavily in the first two games. And it obviously had all kinds of issues there. So yeah, I'm very excited. I've had some interactions with him, you know, individually, and he seems like a really nice guy. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to kind of see what he brings and what he is able to do. You know, I really hope that he can get Kansas back on track. You know, I don't know that this is going to lead to them, you know, killing anybody on their offense and then pulling a bunch of upsets, but we should at least see competitive football. You know, they may lose by a couple touchdowns or lose by, you know, three or four scores in Texas, but it won't be because the offense is stalling out, you know, and the defense is, you know, valiantly struggling until they just can't hold on anymore. It'll essentially be because Texas outperforms them in several areas and they're much deeper. Like, I have no problem with that. What I want to see is that improvement. The question I have for you, though, is I'm wondering how much of this was kind of their thought process, you know. How much of a worry is it that Brent Dierman comes in, gets everything set up, and has a good, you know, rest of this year and then a good next year, and then he's gone getting a head coaching job somewhere else?
Yeah, well, I suppose that probably is a worry. I guess the two things are, or my two kind of comebacks would be, you know, if that means they're putting up 50 points a game or whatever, I mean, I'll live with it. Or two, I mean, Les Miles is, you know, up there in age, he's probably not going to be coaching forever. I mean, who's to say that he's not the Les Miles replacement if they do well enough on offense. So, I don't know. I mean, I obviously it's way too early to talk like that, but, I don't think that we should be just saying he's going to be great for a year or two and then see you later.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I guess that's kind of just the insecure Kansas fan in me, you know, that anytime we get something good on football, it just poof disappears. But, you know, I mean, if he has a good, just absolutely night and day difference now in the, you know, the last 6 months or the last six games of this year, and they have a really follow that up with a really strong, you know, performance the next year, like at that point, I think you throw a bunch of money to him. You talk about how he is kind of the head coach in waiting and see if that will allow him to kind of stick around. If he builds something like that here and is absolutely loved by the entire fan base, you know, I could see him potentially just the way that he talks and the way that he comes across potentially, you know, finding the value in being the guy that helps rebuild the Kansas program and then gets to take it over once Les Miles retires and really being beloved and trying to build something that lasts here. And if he's able to do that and able to continue, you know, and assuming that his offense works really well, like I think we're all assuming it's going to work really well. Obviously, it's possible that despite his best efforts, you know, they just don't have the talent to be able to really have everything take off. And maybe that's also what kind of slows it down a little bit, is that, you know, they really still need to restock the offensive talent. And so maybe we see all the flashes. And so he gets to continue with that, and, you know, and they continue to steadily improve. And then Les Miles helps with the recruiting, and they're able to get more guys. And of course, Brent Dierman helping with the recruiting and all the other great recruiters we have, but they slowly start to build the talent back up until eventually, but by the time we get to year three or four, then we actually see good results. And again, this is probably me being overly optimistic and assuming everything's going to go really well, but I do think there's not nearly as much of a worry as, you know, of him leaving. And if he's performing that well, that he does leave, then I think we as Kansas fans would probably take that if, you know, if we lost him in 2 or 3 years because they're performing that well, that somebody wants him as head coach.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think there's anything much more to add, I guess, you know, just to reiterate, I think it's, you know, a pretty exciting time for KU football. I mean, you've seen, and I think we'll probably get to it here with the question that, you know, the offense has been pretty good. And I think that, you know, there's maybe some more exciting times ahead.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to go ahead and throw to one more quick break. Like you said, we do have some questions that came in via Twitter. We'll go ahead and answer those on the other side. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right. So just a couple questions here from Twitter to wrap us up. The first question we have actually came from our editor-in-chief, Mike Plank, over at Rock Chalk Talk. He was quoting a tweet from KSU_fan that was showing the Big 12 teams ranked by their percentage of plays that were 20-plus yards on offense. So what people consider to be explosive plays. And what that showed is that Kansas is actually third in the conference by that explosive play measure. They have 9% of their plays that have gone for 20-plus yards or more. The only two teams that have performed better by that metric are Oklahoma and Baylor. And so what the question that Mike had was, how much or how do you explain this, and how much of that is coming from the BC game? So I actually went and looked it up and looked at a few things there and did some comparisons. But I want to get your thoughts first. What do you think is the explanation for this? Is it the BC game by itself, or do you think that there's something else going on there?
Well, you know, I don't really do any research, so I just have wild guesses. I definitely think it's probably mostly the BC game. Just thinking about it, I mean, they had quite a few long runs just from Herbert alone. Although, you know, they did have a couple long plays in this Oklahoma game, and they had quite a few in the West Virginia game as well. But yeah, I think if you take out that BC game, they probably drop to like fifth or sixth in the conference personally.
Yeah. So in the BC game, they had 9 plays of 20 plus yards or more. In the Oklahoma game, they had 7 plays of 20 plus yards or more. They also had,
oh, wow.
if you're looking at that 10 plus play metric, you know, it's the same sort of thing. They had the same number of 10 to 19 yard plays in the Oklahoma game as they did in the BC game. So it's not strictly just BC game. Now I think BC was a higher percentage because no, I take that back. BC was not a higher percentage. Oklahoma was actually a higher percentage because they had a lot more three and out drives Kansas did. And so they didn't actually run as many plays in the Oklahoma game as they did in the Boston College game. So what we actually saw was that the percentage is actually higher in Oklahoma, but there was more explosive plays in the BC game. So, you know, this Oklahoma game, it seemed like they were starting to embrace the RPO concepts a little bit more. They were using a little bit more misdirection. And I think that was out of necessity, because when you lose a guy like Khalil Herbert and don't have his ability to kind of run in the middle, they were still running Puka off tackle a lot more than I thought that they were going to. But they were doing some misdirection. They were doing some additional things to kind of get him out in space, and they were throwing to some of the receivers a lot more often. So, while it's easy to say, oh, my gosh, that BC game is, you know, skewing these completely, like, that's not actually the case, because Oklahoma contributed to that almost as much or more than the actual BC game did. Now, that's brought back down by obviously the Coastal Carolina game and the NAIA State game and that TCU game. Like, you know, they're being brought down by some of the other games they had, but like that West Virginia game, they had quite a few, kind of there in the middle. But yeah, they have two phenomenal games in terms of explosive plays that have kind of really showed what this team can do. So the question is going to be moving forward, are they going to continue that and are they going to improve that number? You know, Oklahoma is far and away above everyone else at 15.4% in terms of that 20-plus. They also have 2.2% of their plays are 50-plus yards, which is absolutely insane. But Baylor is the next highest one at 10.8, and Kansas is right at 9.0%. So, you know, there's not that much of a gap for them to make up to get up to Baylor, especially if Baylor falls off a little bit. So theoretically, if, you know, the offensive change is as good as they think it can be, you know, there is a chance that Kansas could continue to have a lot of explosive plays, which could make for some very exciting football for us in the next few weeks. So, all right. And then there was one other question. Oh, actually, while I'm grabbing this other question, did you have any other thoughts about that particular question?
No, I mean, I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head and you're the one who did the research. So I'm going to leave it to you, I think.
All right. So the other question came from Landon Fields on Twitter. He's one of the guys over on Rock Chalk blog that does the Inside the Paint podcast. We like to throw questions back and forth to each other, so I'm glad that he kind of chimed in here. But he asked, if the basketball team played against the football team in football, who would win? So I'm going to ask you real quick. I think the answer is pretty obvious, but just real quick, before I kind of tweak this question, what would you say the answer to that would be?
Well, I mean, sheer numbers alone, right? Like, you know, all the basketball players that have played both offense, defense, and special teams. So, you know, if nothing else, they get tired towards the fourth quarter. So,
right, just from
a
depth
standpoint, it's got to be the football team for depth alone.
But I think if we tweak the question a little bit, so let's change it to, you know, 7-on-7 football, where you have essentially like a 10-player squad that you're rotating guys in and out for 7-on-7 football. Or even if you did like the top 7 from each and played them both ways. You know, I'm wondering if the answer is still the same. So if we change it, instead of being a full 11-on-11 where you can sub guys in for offense, defense, special teams, what if you played a little 7-on-7 backyard football? Do you think the answer stays the same?
Does the basketball team get James Cecinski, or does he stay with the football team?
That is a good question. I don't think he's technically on the roster right now as a walk-on, so
yeah,
I'm having
that's
this
fair.
Probably that they didn't get him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still gonna say, you know, I'm still gonna say the football team. Obviously, the basketball team's got a lot of good athletes, more so this year than last year. So that maybe narrows it a little bit. I mean, I think wasn't Devon Dotson or one of them was a high school quarterback, right?
I might just be
pulling stuff out of my butt, but
I thought a little bit of football in high school, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
That might be right. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I don't know that if they don't have a, you know, a guy who played high school quarterback, I mean, you're at a huge disadvantage there. So,
I think where they're really at a disadvantage is on the line, because even when you're playing 7-on-7, you still have to have 3 linemen, you know, and so like you still have to be able to block the rushers that are going to be coming. And yeah, I mean, they've got, you know, Doak, who's big, and Silvio and Mitch. Like, I think Mitch is probably the best in terms of on the basketball team to be a lineman, but he is you know, more of a tight end type as opposed to really being able to stop any of those defensive rushers. So if they don't have a true quarter, like a guy that can actually play quarterback, and they don't have really anybody that can block on the offensive line, their offense is not going to be able to do anything. And then, you know, take into account that they're not going to be able to do anything kind of going back the other way. So, yeah, I mean, no matter how you think about it, either could depth in a normal football sense or even in like backyard football, 7-on-7 rules, the football team is definitely better equipped to win in a football game. Now, if you went the other way, like the football team, I don't think they have enough good athletes to even come close in any kind of pickup basketball.
Oh yeah, no way.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will go ahead and leave it there. That was kind of our off the wall. We actually have just a couple minutes left. Did you have a random sports minute for us for today?
I did, and then the Twins went and did what the Twins do in the playoffs, so now I'm too mad and sad to do it. So we're gonna cancel it until next week.
So our random sports minute is that the Twins were the Twins again in baseball, and now you're depressed.
That's the long and short of it, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's disappointing, but at least you didn't lose 100 games for the second team or for the second season in a row. So, all right, we'll
Yeah,
go ahead and
they'll
leave
be
it
back
there.
next year.
Yep, exactly. All right, Fetch, thanks again for joining me tonight. And any other final thoughts you want to leave anyone with before we get out of here?
No, I think we nailed it.
All right, sounds good. Well, thanks again for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, go out wherever you get your podcast and subscribe to the podcast. We're on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, pretty much every app that's out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk. You can subscribe, give us a rating, a review, 5 stars, nice comments would be great. If you can't, for whatever reason, just let us know what it is that we can work on. If you do want to contact us with any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact us by email, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com, or on Twitter @rockchalkpod. You'd always talk to Fetch on Twitter @rockchalktalk. And we like to interact with you guys there. This is about bringing you guys the best product for you. We are actually next week going to, well, the end of this week and then next week, going to kind of be taking a pause because we're on the bye week, kind of wrapping up, kind of like a mid-season review type thing. So if you guys have any suggestions, anyone you want me to try to get on the podcast, let me know here in the next few days, and I can see if I can get them for that. But we do have a couple other people I'm already talking to, so we'll see what we can get for you guys. It should be a good couple of shows, even though we don't have any actual KU football going on this weekend. So we'll go ahead and leave it there. Once again, thank you guys so much for listening. Fetch, thanks again for joining me, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.